Throughout the ages, history has been altered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen in the past. I'm Barry Strom, your host. I'll be doing the channeling tonight.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host, and I would also like to welcome you to our show. Last week, we spoke to the spirits of four World War II heroes that were recipients of the Medal of Honor. We had each of them tell of their acts of bravery, and then we asked for their thoughts on what is taking place in our modern world. This and all of our shows are available on our YouTube channel that's in the name of Barry Strom and has over 610 videos. We are currently consolidating all of our audio broadcasts on a new platform named Podbean.com. Just go to the site and search Barry Strom. This week, we're going to expand on our conversations with the medal recipients. We're going to channel four Medal of Honor recipients from four different wars in which the United States was a participant: World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, and the war in Iraq. We will describe their acts of bravery from their Medal of Honor citations and then speak with their spirits. You will see that bravery is not just unique to the greatest generation of World War II. So please feel free to submit any comments or questions through the chat room.
Okay, we're going to give a short disclaimer before we start. The opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits and do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Parix Network, or of our sponsors. And as you know, before we channel, we all say a prayer of protection. So Connie will say the prayer, and we will begin to channel with these great spirits that we have tonight.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God. Our main goal in this series is to honor those who have fought for, and in many instances gave their lives up for, this country and their comrades in battle. The Medal of Honor is in the United States Armed Forces' highest military decoration and is awarded to members of the armed forces that have distinguished themselves by acts of valor. The medal is generally awarded by the President of the United States.
Okay, tonight let's begin with another hero from the Second World War. Douglas Munro is the only member of the Coast Guard to receive the Medal of Honor. Munro and others were responsible for navigating landing crafts full of Marines along the coast of Guadalcanal, one of the Solomon Islands in the South Pacific. A month into the Guadalcanal campaign, then Marine Lieutenant Colonel Lewis Puller embarked three companies of U.S. Marine into landing craft to take control of the western regions of the island. Munro was only 22 years old at the time, but he took control and command of the 10 landing craft to move Puller's men to the western coast. The landing crafts were Higgins boats. They're 36 foot in length, with their sides and rear constructed of plywood and a front steel ramp designed to be lowered quickly so that the men could storm the beach. Each boat could hold a 36-man patrol and had a steering position, as well as two machine gun positions in the rear of the boat. After successfully landing the Marines, they moved 500 yards inland. Munro took all but one of the landing craft and returned to the staging area. Just an hour after the landing on the western coast of the island, Marine forces were overcome by Japanese bombing raids and driving out their gunfire support. Munro volunteered to navigate the same landing craft to rescue the Marines from enemy fire. Nearing the beach and braving incoming fire, Monroe directed the landing craft to push forward, even with Japanese forces gaining ground and nearing the beach. As the Marines re-embarked onto the landing craft, Monroe immediately navigated his vessel between the enemy fire and the Marine forces, providing much-needed cover for the Marines as they tried to reload onto the boats. With his efforts, all of the Marines, including the wounded, were safely taken off the island. Monroe later helped to free a grounded landing craft that was full of Marines who were not far from the enemy forces. The craft had run up on a sandbar and was not able to reverse out of its position to safety. He positioned his boat to screen the grounded landing craft from Japanese fire. At the same time, Japanese forces began firing machine gun rounds, and Monroe was struck with a single bullet. He died before the forces returned to the staging area. In a letter dated just 5 days later, the commanding officer of the unit wrote to inform Monroe's parents of their son's heroism and death. The letter stated, "Upon regaining consciousness, his only question was, did they get off?" referring to the Marines in the ship on the sandbar. They told him that he did, and the brave Coast Guardsman died with a smile on his face, with full knowledge that he had successfully accomplished a very dangerous mission.
Thank you so much for joining us, Doug. You are an amazing soul. What role did the Coast Guard play in World War II?
Most people don't realize it, but the Coast Guard played a very important role in World War II. We were in charge of many of the landing crafts. The Marines were put onto the crafts to fight, and we were trained to, shall we say, captain each one of these landing crafts. That preserved the Marines for fighting, and those of us who were members of the Coast Guard, who were trained in running ships of this nature, were the ones that actually did the driving or the piloting of each of these landing crafts. The Coast Guard played a huge role in World War II, often undersung, but they were participating in all of the amphibious landings. They did much during the war. Many of the Coast Guardmen were killed in combat. I was very lucky to be the only one to receive the medal. But there were many of the men that did what was vitally needed to support the Marines in all of their landings. We were present at the Normandy landings. We ran all the landing ships that let the soldiers upon the beaches at Normandy. And we were present in all of the amphibious operations. So the Coast Guard actually played a very, very large role in World War II.
They did. Why did you choose the Coast Guard?
I thought that it was an interesting service. I always loved boats. And I thought that it would be a good position to be in. I didn't really want to get involved with ground combat, but I wanted to do everything that I could, and I felt that the Coast Guard would give me the opportunity to participate and to help assure that the Marines under our charge would be competently guided to wherever their missions were required them to go.
When you enlisted, did you believe that you would see combat?
I knew that I would see combat. I knew that we would be in a position that we would be shot at. Running the landing ships was very, very dangerous. Quite often we would have bad information or we would run up on obstructions. The ships were made of plywood. They were not heavily armored, and If we could not keep moving with them, they would quite often become very vulnerable targets. The landing ships were great crafts. They were designed to run up on a beach. They were designed to be pulled back off the beach. But they were also very, very dangerous ships to be in charge of. When you were in the machine gun emplacements at the rear of the boats, you did not have any armor, and you were very easy for the enemy to take shots at you.
Okay, so you were in charge of 10 Hagen's boats, or landing craft. Would you explain how these boats would engage in an amphibious landing?
The boats would be transported on larger ships, and those were the ships that would the Marines would be on between different battle engagements. They would be lowered into the water, and generally there were large nets that the Marines would climb down and enter these boats. We would then circle and get into a formation for the safety sake of the ships, and then we would, in formation, head for the beach. As we would draw closer, we would obviously draw enemy fire, but the front portions of the ship, the part that would be lowered for those the Marines could exit, that was made of steel and would give us some protection. We would run up as close to the beach as possible, and we would drop the fronts of the boats, and the Marines in the ship would then charge onto the beach. A single landing craft would hold around 36 fighting Marines.
Would you please tell us about your role in the landing that ended up taking your life?
It all started out as a fairly ordinary mission, if any mission on Guadalcanal could be considered ordinary. We landed the Marines, and they went inland without a lot of opposition. We thought that we would return, and when we did, we started to realize that it was an ambush for the Marines on the island. The Japanese were waiting for them, and they quickly started to use their hidden firing positions to attack the Marines. Their aircraft came in and were dropping bombs and were strafing them, and they wiped out their radio control. They actually formed the words "help" with undershirts on the shore, and we were watching and we saw this, and we knew that we had to go back and try to extract them safely. As we approached the shore, the Marines were coming as fast as they could to get onto the ships, and the Japanese were chasing them and shooting at them. They started to fire, and I had our machine guns ready, and we backed our ship in and blocked the fire. I opened my machine gun up on the Japs, and we slowed them up considerably. They were not expecting the fire that we had. One of the LCTs got stuck on a sandbar. It was full of Marines. There were probably 30 to 35 of them inside the ship at the time. And they were having trouble getting the ship to release. I put my craft between them trying to block because I knew they were sitting ducks and they did not have armor on the side of the ships. So the Japs were bringing the machine guns in and they were starting to fire on all of our vessels. I thought that I would try to protect them with our own ship, and we took machine gun fire, and I was hit. It's really that simple. We did manage to get the stranded ship off the bar, and all the Marines on that vessel were safe. So I guess that I succeeded, or helped to succeed, in what took place.
Doug, if you had to do it over, would you make any changes to your actions?
No, I would do the same thing, because those Marines in that landing craft were sitting ducks, sitting on that sandbar. Machine gun fire would have wiped all of them out if we hadn't been able to do something. My ship was taking fire, but that was what I intended it to do. Mine was not loaded with sailors at the time, so I knew that I was not putting any of my guys in danger.
How many lives do you think were saved by your actions?
It's very hard to tell, but I think that probably everyone in that stranded craft would have been killed. The Japs were having no problems with setting their machine guns up at the time, and the boys in that craft were sitting ducks, and they were fully loaded. That was how they got stuck, because they had the more weight in their craft than I had in mine.
As you watched from the other side, did you expect to be awarded the Medal of Honor?
No. I thought that I was simply doing my job. I was trying to save the life of those that were part of the group that I was responsible for. I just simply did what I thought was necessary at the time. And I think that you'll find that most people that act bravely in these situations do just what they think is necessary. But no, I would absolutely do it again. There was no other way to protect that boat.
Yes, that's what we're hearing from all of you wonderful people. Would you tell our listeners what it means to be a recipient of the Medal of Honor?
I look at that medal as every person that was on that beach that day deserved a medal. Just because I was recognized for what I did, everyone that was there was acting heroically. They were trying to save their buddies' lives. They were dragging the wounded Marines to the ships so that they could get them to safety. No one was left behind that day. They were all heroes, and they were all deserving of medals. I look at it as that medal is part of every man that was on that mission on that day.
The Coast Guard reveres your memory, and all recruits are still made to be aware of your actions. How does that make you feel as you watch from the other side?
I'm very proud. I think that perhaps my role is overstated, but it is a great honor for the Coast Guard to still treat my memory as they do.
Doug, thank you for joining us, and thank you for what you did for our country and all your fellow warriors. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes. Thank you for allowing me to speak. All of the men that fought on those islands were brave, and they all deserved medals. I was given one, and I do not think that what I did was more brave than what many of the other men do. Please remember them. Do not forget the generation that fought that terrible war, especially in the Pacific. Thank you for allowing me to come through. I appreciate that you still are remembering my name and what we did.
That's well deserved.
Okay, the Korean War was an escalation of border clashes between two rival Korean regimes, each of which was supported by external powers. The North Korean regime was trying to topple the South Korean regime through political and guerrilla tactics. The Communist Party, North Korean Army, moved south on June 25, 1950, to attempt to reunite the Korean Peninsula, which had been formally divided since 1948. The conflict was then expanded by the Chinese and the Soviet Union's involvement as part of the larger Cold War. Main hostilities were during the period from June 25, 1950 until the armistice was signed on July 27, 1953. 146 United States military personnel received the Medal of Honor for valor in contact in combat during the Korean War. 103 of those 146 medals of honor were awarded posthumously. Emory Lawrence Bennett was a United States Army soldier in the Korea War who posthumously received the U.S. military's highest decoration. At approximately 0200 hours, two enemy battalions swarmed up a ridgeline in a ferocious bonsai charge in an attempt to dislodge PFC's company from its defensive positions. meaning it challenged the defenders, delivered destructive retaliation, but the enemy pressed the assault with fanatical determination and integrity of the perimeter of the private's company was imperiled. Fully aware of the odds against him, Private First Class Bennett unhesitatingly left his foxhole, left through weathering fire, stood within full view of the enemy, and employed his automatic rifle, pouring crippling fire into the ranks of the onrushing Chinese, inflicting very numerous casualties. Although wounded, Private Bennett gallantly maintained his one-man defense, and the attack was momentarily halted. During this lull in the battle, the company regrouped for counterattack, but the numerically superior foe soon infiltrated their position. Upon orders to move back, Private First Class Bennett voluntarily remained to provide covering fire for the withdrawing elements and, defying the enemy, continued to sweep the charging foe with his devastating fire until mortally wounded. His willing self-sacrifice and intrepid action saved the position from being overrun and enabled the company to effect an orderly withdrawal.
Emery, thank you for joining us this evening. You all are so amazing what you did. What was it like fighting in the Korean War?
The Korean War was a very, very nasty place to be. The winters were brutal in Korea. Many of the guys basically froze to death out there. The North Koreans initially were pushed back by the United Nations forces. And then in comes the Chinese and the Soviet Union to reinforce them with weapons and manpower. And we were facing attacks much like the Japanese had used during World War II. They were bonsai attacks. They had the same type of philosophies in fighting. And there were many, many men that were wounded. The war became almost a stalemate. It was just a very nasty place to be.
Okay. Did you volunteer for service in the Army?
Yes. I wanted to fight Korea. I had missed World War II, and I wanted to go into the military. And it was the height of the Cold War, and I wanted to help protect our country.
Will you please tell us about the battle that took your life?
The description that was read is pretty accurate. We were fortified in a defensive position, and we were told that we were going to be facing an attack by the combination of the North Koreans and the Chinese. We did not expect them to be in two battalion size. There was a huge amount of manpower involved. Today you would refer to it as a meat grinder charge. We had automatic weapons and we laid a lot of them onto the ground and we fought as best we could, but we were just simply being overpowered. I thought that I could find a better fighting position, so that I left my foxhole. I had an automatic weapon and I used it to the best of my abilities. My effectiveness with the weapon caught them off guard, and temporarily they held back their attack. My guys regrouped, and all of a sudden, here they came again. I knew that they had to pull back to better defensive positions, and somebody had to have covering fire. I had been wounded and figured that I would probably have problems surviving the battle anyway. So I continued to fire as long as I could. I did manage to delay the charge as best I could, but my time came and that was the end.
Would you make any changes to the action that took your life?
I would have tried to do it with a weapon that fired more rounds. I wish I'd had a heavy machine gun instead, but none was available and I did the best that I could do. No, I would do exactly what I did, because it did definitely help save the lives of the guys who were with me.
So you just totally put your life on the line for all your friends, your brothers. Do you have an idea of how many enemy lives you took during that action?
It's very difficult to say. I mean, with all the guys were firing. When I went to my position, I believe that I probably hit, they were lined up like sitting ducks. I believe I probably dropped around 20 to 25 of them before they stopped the charge. I think they thought that there were many more guys shooting at them than just myself. The second time they came at me, I probably killed, five or 10 of them before I was hit. So in reality, I would guess that I had probably accounted for over 30 to 35 of them.
How many lives do you think were saved by your actions? And is there some special character trait that makes a person perform such acts of bravery?
I think that my actions probably saved all the men that were in my company at the time. We had taken some losses, and we were generally a little short-staffed at that point. But they did manage to get back into a defensive position, and although they did take some losses at that point, they were successful in driving the Chinese attack back. It's almost impossible for me to say. If I hadn't have done it, they would have had more losses. I think they still would have been able to stop the attack because they were in a very good defensive and fallback position. But it's very hard for me even to make an estimate.
As you watched from the other side, did you expect to be awarded the Medal of Honor?
No. I had many of my friends were fighting just as bravely as I was. They just weren't stupid enough to get out of the foxhole and do it from the open. I was actually very surprised. I knew that actions such as I was taking would usually result in some type of a medal, maybe a bronze, silver star, or something like that. But I truly didn't expect that they would put me in for the Medal of Honor. I was actually shocked as I watched from the other side when it took place.
Would you tell our listeners just what it means to you to be a recipient of the Medal of Honor?
I consider the fact that I was given the medal, that I'm just a custodian of it for all of the other guys on that day fought bravely as well, and they deserved the medal as much as I did. Generally, if you're killed and they assume that I had given up my life voluntarily, then you will receive a higher posthumous medal. All the guys fought bravely. If they hadn't, none of them would have made it on that day. They were vastly outnumbered. And I think the Chinese were surprised that so few members of the military could hold back such a large group.
As you watch from today, would you say that your sacrifice was worthwhile?
Undoubtedly. We had to stop them. We were either going to stop them or they were going to kill us. There was nothing in between. You did not want to be taken prisoner by the Chinese. Most of the time, they would simply shoot the prisoners. It was the last thing, so you knew that you were involved in an operation such as this, that it was kill or be killed. When you're in a situation, you do what you have to do, and that was what I did.
Emery, thank you for joining us this evening and sharing your story and your thoughts. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Yes. I would like to thank you for allowing me to tell my story. The Korean War, in many ways, is a forgotten war. It was fought by all the members of the UN, but the Americans had the greatest amount of fighters there. It wasn't a very popular war, and coming after the incredible Second World War with all the carnage that it brought. Many people tend to forget those who fought in Korea. But we sent a message to the communist nations that we were not going to be run over. We died there just the same as all the guys did in the Second World War and the same as the guys did in Vietnam that was to come next. We fought bravely and we showed the communist countries that they were not going to run over us. North Korea today is still a grave danger to our country. One of these days, you will have to reckon with what they're doing as we did. But thank you for listening. Thank you for allowing me to tell my story.
Thank you. During the Vietnam War, which began in November 1955 and lasted until the fall of Saigon in April of 1975, we saw 2,710,000 Americans serve, with 58,000 of them dying and 303,000 being wounded, many terrible wounds. There were 235 Medal of Honor awarded and since 1978, and a further and more 33 more awards have been presented since then. Of the total of 268 awards, 179 were to the U.S. Army, 15 to the U.S. Navy, 58 to the U.S. Marine Corps, and 14 to the U.S. Air Force. As many as 2 million Vietnamese citizens died in this conflict. So we're going to tell you the story of a brave Thomas Bennett, a conscientious objector opposed to the taking of lives by others. Born in Morgantown, West Virginia, Thomas W. Bennett was sociable and deeply religious. He was raised Southern Baptist, patriotic, but opposed to killing on religious grounds. He opted to enlist as a conscientious objector who was willing to serve. This classification is different from a conscientious objector who will not assist in the military in any way. He was trained as a field medic. Bennett arrived in South Vietnam on January 1, 1969, and was assigned to Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 14th Infantry in the Central Highlands of Vietnam. The unit began a series of strenuous patrols in the dense mountainous terrain. On February 9, 1969, the unit came under intense fire, and Bennett risked gunfire to pull at least five wounded men to safety. That evening, his platoon sergeant recommended him for the Silver Star. Over the coming days, Bennett repeatedly put himself in harm's way to tend to the wounded. On February 14th, while attempting to reach a soldier wounded by a sniper fire, Bennett was gunned down. On April 7th, 1970, his posthumous Medal of Honor was presented to his mother and stepfather by President Richard Nixon. So, Corporal Bennett, thank you so much for joining us tonight. What was it like to be a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War?
Some of the guys definitely resented it. Some of the guys thought that it was being a coward. But when they realized that my type of conscientious objector was being trained to be a medic, they all changed their minds because they realized that being a medic was very, very dangerous, especially in Vietnam. The Vietnamese would actually try to kill the medics. They would be a priority target. So we would not wear the cross and many of the things that a medic under normal circumstances would wear. Many of the men were wounded in Vietnam. Many were not killed outright, and the medics would rush in and try to save their lives. In actuality, the field medics are what gave the guys confidence. They knew that we would make every effort that we could to save their lives, to do what needed to be done. And it was just simply expected of us. When you're in the middle of a battle, guys aren't asking you about your conscientious objector status. The only difference is sometimes the medics would, if they were surrounded or their lives were endangered, would grab a weapon and help fight. But I never did that. I felt very strongly that I did not want to take another's life, but that I simply wanted to save the lives of others.
So why did you decide to enlist?
Well, I was going to the university, and my grades weren't very good, and I was on academic pro. I had had a deferment for going to college, and I feared that I would lose that deferment, and if I did, I would have problems with the draft. So I decided it would be better to enlist with my conscientious objector status than wait for them to drag me into the Army and try to use my status after I'd been drafted.
So how were you treated in the military as a conscientious objector?
You are definitely treated differently. You don't take as much of the combat training, but you're generally assigned to units that don't see a lot of combat. I wanted to prove that I was patriotic and I wanted to help the guys, so I chose to become a medic and went through medical training for that purpose. Medics are respected pretty much in all units of the fighting services. Each soldier knows that their life could depend on that medic that's part of their unit. And they treat them basically like any of the other guys.
So what was it like fighting in the Vietnam War?
Vietnam was a terrible war. But then again, there was no such thing as a good war. The mountainous terrain was very rugged. It was overgrown. Quite often, you would be ambushed by the enemy. They would use primitive traps. They would dig holes and cover them. You would fall in, and they would have sharp sticks there that they had infected with human feces so that you'd be sure to be infected and die from it if you didn't have immediate care. They were committed fighters. They would fight like they had no fear for their lives. Many of them would give up their lives just to take the life of an American or one of the allies that were fighting with us. They were brutal people. You did not want to be captured by them. They would torture the captives before they killed them. They were a terrible enemy. They knew the terrain. Quite often they had tunnels that they would hide in, that they would use for ambush. You never knew when you were about to be shot at from them. It was an incredibly difficult war.
Yeah. Could you explain to our listeners what it was like to be a medic in that war?
It was a very dangerous position to be in. If a soldier was, shall we say, hit by a sniper, we would try to go in and try and get the soldier to safety so that we could give him first aid. But that sniper would be shooting at you just like he was shooting at the soldier that he had already hit. And if that soldier was hit, you knew that you were in the open and were going to be in great danger, but it was still your role to try to get that wounded soldier to a place of safety. You would rush in, and as rapidly as you could, you would drag them to a safe spot. Quite often, what you thought was safe would turn out to be not quite as safe as you thought. Their snipers would often be in trees, and they would be able to shoot down. So they had great control over the killing zones that they were trying to protect. You never knew when you were going to have to go into service and try to rescue another soldier. There were many things. There were problems. And it was a very, very risky job at war.
How many lives do you think were saved by your actions?
Oh, I don't know. They talk about 5, 6, but I had saved other people before that. The job of a medic is very, very important. you actually lose count of how many men that you've tried to work with and save their lives. It's not easy to be a medic, but I was trying to prove a point. I was very patriotic. My religious beliefs precluded me from taking up a weapon and killing others. I wish at times that it had not precluded them from killing me, but I did what I was supposed to do.
As you watched from the other side, did you expect to be awarded the Medal of Honor?
No, I did not expect it. There was so much bravery in Vietnam that was never recorded. There were incidents where soldiers gave up their lives for their fellow soldiers, and it would be back in the woods or the swamps and would never be recorded. I did what I needed to do. The men that were wounded, sadly, were in very dangerous positions, and I put my life in danger trying to get them to safety and to work on them. But that is what a medic does. In many ways, medics are the unsung heroes every day. They're the ones that have to go into the killing zone and try to save the lives of an individual that has already been wounded. You don't know whether you're going to step on a mine or whether you're going to be shot by the same person that shot that individual. So you just simply have to put out fear of dying, put it out of your mind, and focus on the job at hand.
Would you tell our listeners what it means to you to be a recipient of the Medal of Honor?
I feel that there are others that deserve the medal much more than I did. Medics are supposed to save soldiers that are wounded in action. When a soldier's wounded, they're in a very dangerous area. So a medic is always rushing into these dangerous areas to save lives. Many of the other medics did the same thing I did and were not recognized for their valor and bravery. There were many individuals that were simply wounded and not killed because of the bravery of the medics. I think that my medal should have gone to all of them. I did what I was supposed to do, and I was rewarded for it with this medal. But that medal should hang on the chest of all the members of the medical corps that acted bravely throughout the war.
Do you have any regrets about being a conscientious objector?
No. I never doubted God. I never doubted my beliefs. I never doubted that I did not want to kill another individual or take a life. I only wanted to save lives. No one ever doubted my patriotic beliefs. Sometimes in the beginning, they would doubt my courage, but I proved to them that I was far capable of doing as much as any other individual. I just simply did not take up a weapon and kill others.
Were you ever tempted to pick up a weapon and defend yourself?
There were times that I thought about it, but I wanted to remain true to my beliefs.
As you watch our country today, do you think your sacrifice was worthwhile?
Absolutely. There were many that did not support the war in Vietnam. Many did not support the boys when they came home. But that was not the fault of the military. That was the fault of the leaders. Many feel that we should have never been there in the first place. And maybe we shouldn't have. But communism was growing in the world. And it was very important that they were stopped. Perhaps there was a time that we should have ended the war much earlier. Political decisions were made that stopped the military from doing what they needed to do to truly win the war. If the politicians would have made the proper decisions, we could have won Vietnam. We could win. Our military was strong enough to win anywhere. In Korea, the decision was made not to go into China. The decision was made basically not to destroy North Korea. We were limited in going into the neighboring countries, which the North Vietnamese were using for support and to find safety. We could have won, but as I say, the political decision stopped us from doing it.
That's very sad. Corporal Bennett, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story and your thoughts. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes, I would like to tell all the listeners that even though many believe that conflicts are not what our country should be involved in, that they should not take their anger out against the military. The military follows the orders of the political leaders. The president is a commander. If the president commands the military to go into a battle or a war, they will do it. The military follows orders. Politicians give orders. The generals, they will do what the politicians want in most cases. The soldiers were so mistreated after Vietnam when they came home. I would sincerely hope that it never occurs again, and that the people support the military at all times. They're following orders. If you want to take out your anger, take it out on those that give the orders.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said when everybody came back from Vietnam and they were getting a lot of bad treatment from the people. It wasn't their decision. They were just trying to do what was right for our country. So thank you so much for joining us.
Okay. Of the roughly 2.5 million service members who have been deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq over the past decade, just 16 have received the Medal of Honor. Marine Corporal Jason Dunham was one of them. While his unit was engaged in a major firefight in Iraq along the Syrian border on April 14, 2004, Dunham and his team stopped several vehicles to search him for weapons. As he approached one of the vehicles, the driver lunged at Dunham's throat with a knife, and they fought in a hand-to-hand battle. Wrestling on the ground, Dunham yelled to his Marines, "No, no, watch his hand." The insurgent then dropped a grenade with the pin pulled. Dunham jumped on top of it, placing his helmet between his body and the grenade in an effort to blunt the explosion. He was mortally wounded by the explosion, but the other members of the group were saved. Lance Corporal Jason Sanders, who was a soldier in Dunham's company, told the Marine Corps News he knew exactly what he was doing. He wanted to save Marines' lives from that grenade. He saved the lives of at least two as the corporal sacrificed his life for the blast. For his bravery, he was posthumously awarded our nation's highest honor. Corporal Dunham, thank you for joining us tonight with your presence.
Thank you so much. Why did you want to join the Marines?
It was a time that I wanted to protect our country. I knew that the Marines were one of the greatest fighting forces that ever walked the earth. If you were a Marine, you were a Marine for life. You were loved by your buddies. You were protected by your buddies. They would do anything to protect your life. You knew that a Marine always covers your back in combat. You know that if you're wounded, that they will do the best to save your life. And if you lose it, they will do the best they can to take your body with them. The Marines gave me great structure in my life. They gave me brotherhood. They did all the things that I wanted and that I needed at that time of my life.
Will you tell our listeners what it was like fighting in Iraq?
You were not fighting uniformed soldiers, so you never knew who your enemy was. They would dress like the civilians, and we had to be very careful that we were not hassling or killing civilians. We would do our best to try to figure out who would be involved. We tried to win the hearts and minds of the locals, but they wanted very little of it in reality. We did have locals that gave us great support, and we had people that would give us intelligence, but quite often they would give us bad intelligence as well. It was a very difficult time, especially if you were on the border areas. There were members of the enemy that you could not identify. And in the instance where I got into trouble, that was the situation.
It's really scary. Is there any special character trait that makes a person perform such acts of bravery?
Generally, it's a reflex. You are trained. You're trained to save the life of those on both sides of you. You will respond just the same as you know that your buddies would respond in those situations. I knew that my guys were there as backup. They had their weapons. But when the driver of the vehicle tried to kill me with a knife, we were involved in hand-to-hand combat. We were wrestling on the ground, and they were afraid to take a shot at him for fear that they would hit me. I did not know until we were in hand-to-hand that he was holding a grenade. It was his intent all the time to throw the grenade into our group and to kill as many of us as possible. He knew he was on a suicide mission. But that is simply the way battles go.
As you lost your life, how were you greeted in heaven?
All of a sudden, I was looking down at my body on the ground, and there were several angels there, and I had energies there that turned out to be my deceased family members. They said that they would help me and that they would show me the way. I was greeted with great honor. They realized that I had sacrificed my life for others. And many of them said that there is no greater sacrifice than to save those that you love. And that was what I had done.
How were you judged when you returned to heaven?
I was judged in a very good manner. There were things I had done in my youth that they realized that I had done. Because of the way that I had sacrificed my life for others, they did not pay any attention, basically did not pay attention to those events. I was allowed to advance in my realm in which I reside. And they assured me that in my future life, I had created a karma that would lead me to have a very good future life when I chose to go back. They were very pleased that I had shown such a love for my brothers in uniform.
How do you think our younger generation would respond if the United States was attacked today?
I think a majority of them would still respond. Keep in mind, we have a volunteer army. We haven't had to draft for many years. In many of the other wars, you've had to resort to a draft. If a major war breaks out, you will certainly draft individuals. But there are many patriotic young men that will still respond. Look at all the great individuals in the military institutions, West Point, Air Force Academy, Naval Academy. These are incredible young leaders, and they will do their best to protect the country at all costs in the future. I think that when the country would need soldiers or sailors, that there will be enough volunteers that things would still go well for the country.
As you watch our country today, do you think your sacrifice was worthwhile?
There are many things that I don't like to see in the younger generation. There's much hatred, anti-Semitism. There are a lot of bad things that are taking place. But I have no doubt that what I did for my brothers in uniform, and I did for my country. I was responsible for my own actions.
What changes would you make in today's military?
I think that I would probably begin to have a small military draft. The military provides great leadership for individuals that are struggling. I would work harder to get volunteers out of the inner cities where the youth are so troubled. I would just simply make the military more attractive to the younger generation.
When you return for another life, will the military be a part of it?
Yes, I believe it will. I enjoyed being in the military, and I think I will do it again.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes, I would like to thank you so much for allowing me to speak. I never expected something like this would take place while I'm over here. I just simply did what I needed to do. I acted as I was trained to act, and I saved the life of my brothers. There's no greater sacrifice. And I would do it all over again if I was forced into that same situation. So thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak.
And I would like to thank all four of you for the service to our country and for joining us this evening and sharing it.
Okay. I also want to thank all of you. Another very interesting show. Connie and I have started a new podcast. It's called Hello Heaven. We broadcast it on YouTube and Facebook Live. We do it at Fridays at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Audio is available on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Alexa, and most of the other platforms.
I'd like to thank you for joining us tonight on Channeling History. This week, we brought the story of four individuals that showed extreme bravery during World War II and other wars. Hopefully, their actions will not be forgotten. We always try to bring you the truth about history by speaking to the souls that lived the events. It's only by understanding the events of the past that we can prepare properly for the future. So hopefully our younger generation will take the time to learn about the huge sacrifices individuals have made through the years to protect our freedoms and our way of life.
Okay. I want to thank all of you for listening to us tonight. A holiday is coming that I think is one of the most important ones that we celebrate, and that's Memorial Day. Most people think of it more as a time to have picnics, but I want you to remember all of those that have died in all of the wars to make our country what it is today. There are many out there that would be very happy to see our country fail. And as one of the guys pointed out today, if you're unhappy with the military, don't blame the soldiers. They're following orders. We're facing elections, and we need to elect the individuals that will be best for the people. There are many veterans, many special forces soldiers that are running for offices on both parties. They will be strong leaders, and I think that they are worthy of our support. So thank you for listening. Please join us Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Channeling History. Tune in again next week for another electrifying episode, as we never know who will make an appearance or who will come through the portal. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2020. Our story begins by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.